Welcome to this Day One Podcast Extra, bringing you an extended conversation between our host, Peter Wallace, and a preacher from the Day One Weekly Broadcast. This program is made possible through the financial contributions of our listeners. For more information or to make a donation, please visit our website at dayone.org.
Barbara Brown Taylor is the Buttman Professor of Religion and Philosophy at Piedmont College in Northeast Georgia. She also serves as Adjunct Professor of Christian Spirituality at Columbia Theological Seminary in Decatur, Georgia. An ordained Episcopal priest, she is the author of 12 books, including Leaving Church and An Altar in the World. And she's a frequent lecturer and preacher at seminaries, churches, and conferences around the country. Barbara, welcome. We're glad to have you with us.
Thank you for asking me.
You have such a rich and multifaceted life and ministry. I'm curious, when someone who doesn't know you asks what you do, what do you say? How do you describe yourself?
I usually begin by saying I have too many jobs, and then anyone who's interested can hang in and find out what those are. But teaching college is my primary vocation. That is not only where I spend most of my time, but where I get most of my pleasure.
And you also live on a working farm, though.
I do, which means there's no such thing as taking a day off.
Of course, many of us have long been fans of your preaching and your writing because you are able to communicate deep truths with a clarity and a beauty and a relevance. And you've explained that that's essentially a function of the way truth comes to you, more as narrative rather than as doctrinal bullet points.
True. Stories are both how I've come to truth in my life, so it's sort of the natural form I choose when I'm trying to communicate it as well. Stories. Everywhere I turn, stories.
Well, Jesus seemed to do that a lot.
He's been one of my very good teachers, yes.
But that's a pretty typical human way of learning. It seems, why does Christian formation tend to get away from that so much, do you think?
I truly don't know, because the beauty of story for me is that people can enter the story wherever they want, and they can take up any character's perspective they want. If you still keep up with Myers-Briggs, then it appeals to the sensate types and the intuitive types, and I don't know why, except that perhaps young minds respond better to true, false, fill in the blanks. It might be about educational formation, but I'll leave that to the experts.
Your most recent book, An Altar in the World, helps Christians reclaim the physicality of their faith, our flesh and bones, the spaces we inhabit, the actions we take. Why do you think we as believers have had such trouble with this physical aspect of our lives?
I think it is peculiarly Christian, but I also think it's sort of American and 21st century, so that there are many factors at work. But my favorite person to pick on is Plato. I mean, and then I'll lump Descartes right in on top of that. But in anyone who has encouraged people to think of body and soul as separate and ranked, with soul, spirit, heavenly, divine things always on top and the rest of it always on the bottom. That doesn't make any sense in an incarnate religion.
Is there any evidence in Scripture for this dual approach to the human life?
All the time, especially in John's Gospel, where there are children of light, children of darkness. And even Paul, I'm afraid, goes to town. It's fine for people who know Greek to know the difference between sarx, flesh, and soma, body, but people who don't know Greek only hear him dissing flesh. And it's all over his letters.
Well, so what are some of the ways that we humans can encounter the sacred in the flesh?
It's not even can, you do. Every day when you wake up, I think it's more a matter of how can we stop ignoring the bodily ways in which truth comes to us, or the bodily ways in which God works on us.
But we don't think of those things as sacred. How do we get into that mindset?
Oh, now that is a real problem. But see, right away, that's the dualism you're talking about. We call something sacred or secular, and immediately something like taking water to my animals is not a sacred task when it's life-giving. They depend on it. And it's also how I find myself on the earth, caring for and being cared for in the flesh. It seems huge to me. Sacraments have also been important to me. I think that's probably where I learned first to connect body and spirit, that in the simple handling of bread and wine and water and oil and laying on of hands, that those are the ways God is active with people. So sacraments have really been my thread into that wisdom about the union between body and spirit.
And you are able, it seems to me, to settle yourself deeply into ancient spiritual practices, the sacraments, theology, tradition, the scripture, and yet bring that all to bear in this chaotic world of change. Is there a secret to that? How can we follow your example?
Oh, just become a Luddite. You just don't have a television connection and don't read any periodicals. Not on purpose so much, but truly, when one works more than one job and lives on a working farm, there's not a lot of time left over for what? Brain candy. So in an odd way, I am not as connected to what? Disembodied things. As many of the young people I work with, for instance, I don't spend any time on Facebook. I spend as little time on the computer as I can because I'm 58. I haven't got a lot of time left in the world, and I don't want to give a moment of it up.
It seems as though you're encouraging us to step out of the protective walls of the church and into the wide world of experience in your books. Is that a fair statement?
It is. And I've spent a lot of my time in churches, serving churches and loving churches, but churches that are only about themselves, that are only about church. So I'm much more interested in how God is active in the world and in churches as places both to track and talk about and sacramentalize and give voice to that activity. But if all the arrows point in the church door, it just seems to me everybody inside will suffocate.
Mm. Leaving Church, your previous book, was a bit controversial because some people assumed you were leaving the church rather than moving on from a church where you served as rector for a number of years. It was a very honest and open description of life as a parish priest. What do you hope readers take away from that memoir?
I hope they read it. It was amazing to me, the reactions I got to the title alone. Mm-hmm. It really helped me see there's a huge bruise, at least in mainline churches, that even a title like that can be taken as offense. Most people who went on to read it would say things across the board, like, I've retired. I loved it for every minute I did it, but I've retired and I have the same identity problems. I hear from pharmacists and bankers who say this is a midlife book. It's not about ordained ministry at all. And then I've heard from people who are being ordained next Saturday who say, thank you for showing me what to avoid. Mm. It's been a Rorschach.
A good bit of your time these days is spent in the classroom at Piedmont College. You teach religion and philosophy. What do you hope your students experience during their time in these classes?
I have 16 weeks to haunt them with the questions that matter. And I have two groups of students, those who will only take one religion or philosophy course to graduate, and the majors who will spend more time with me and my colleague, Timothy Lytle. But I also see my job as creating a kind of community they'll remember, a classroom experience they'll remember. I also want them to think learning is worthwhile and something they might continue doing after they have their degrees in hand.
Have you sensed a change in the personalities of students over the years?
I really have, in a number of ways, and some of that's just different waves in enrollment in different colleges. But what I've noticed most of all, because I teach world religions, are young people coming out of public schools who've had best friends who are Buddhist or Muslim or Sikh since first grade. So they're coming in with a much vaster experience, at least, if not knowledge about experience of people from different religions than their own. That was not true 10 years ago.
You also teach occasionally at Columbia Theological Seminary, and I would imagine the students there are much different from the college students you teach. What are your goals with those students?
Those students are pastors. I teach in the Doctor of Ministry program. So I go from 18, 19-year-olds to seasoned pastors, usually. And they go together wonderfully because I go from young to my age. My goal with the pastors, frankly, I don't know if this should be public, but sometimes it's just to give them an easy load. They're worn out. Mm. And they arrive at Columbia in the summertime for 2 weeks of solid work. And I try to make sure I do things like require them to observe the Sabbath or require them to take naps. But my goal is to let them experience, again, classroom community, be with each other, because some of them are solo pastors in little towns, and they never get to be with other people who do what they do.
Barbara Brown Taylor, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for asking me.